All right, it's the club. We got a fun show on tap. We have a returning guest, Crutches. I believe last time we talked to him, he had just come back from Dubai, I think, for a crypto boxing match. He's turning into the most interesting man in the space because now he has qualified for Underdog's Dog Bowl, which is taking place live in Miami this week. We'll get his thoughts on that. He's also a bit of a crypto bro, you know, so we got some interesting things heating up in those streets. We'll talk a little bit about week 14 NFL preview. We got the gauntlet that just dropped, so we got to get into playoff mode here. All kinds of stuff going on the club. Let's do it. Yo, Crutches, I was trying to remember during the cold open, when was it that we last did the show with you when you had just got back from your boxing match? Oh, you're muted.
I think it was like last October or something like that, or like last November. Yeah. I was still living at Allie's parents.
Yeah, Jennings hopped on that show as well, I remember. And we were talking, I'm pretty sure I called the bottom on crypto. I'm not going to like flex too hard there, but I remember you asking me if I thought like the bottom. I didn't claim it was the bottom. I just figured it was closer to the bottom than, you know, like I'm not selling anything, I'm buying. So exciting that things are moving upwards now.
I mean, the one thing, you know, what was dawning on me is, I mean, you're always in the mix, right? I mean, people are starting to throw blows, you know, toss hands in crypto. You're like, fly me out to Dubai. Then Underdog has this live final. You say, let me qualify for that. Crutches, always in the mix.
Yeah, I'm trying to diversify, man. Me and Andy are just like the same brain when it comes to NBA, I think. So like it's fun to get into the other streets. Me and Andy are talking gauntlet stuff right now in the DMs. It's fun to theorize you know, things for that. But yeah, it's fun. There's always something new. Yeah, I'm excited.
How do you feel about some of your Dog Bowl competition perhaps lurking in the chat today, trying to figure out what's going on in your head in the lead up to these drafts on Saturday?
Hey, man, I've done one goal line stand and Crash Rich was the only one in it. It was like early in the week before ADP was even real. It's going to be interesting. I don't think I'm actually going to do a ton of goal line stands. If I do, like just forewarning, I'm probably just going to like mostly auto. I'm not like taking, like I might note to myself who I like in each spot, but I'm not like whoever I click is not like who I'm going to be taking in drafts. So I'll probably just more so do it to make mental notes and like see what kind of builds I like. So
yeah, I think if I had qualified, I think I would have been in a very similar boat as you because it is so different. I mean, you're competing against 35 other entries versus the Dog Bowls were what, always like 5,200, 5,300 in size.
Yeah.
And even like the goal line stand, like you're just, and also from a portfolio or an exposure standpoint, like I'm sure you're going to just like have your guys or something that you want to build around. Whereas like knowing who's like a 1.5x ADP faller, you know, is like not as big of use to you, I would say this week.
Yeah. It's a weird concept because if you do the math, even though it feels like pretty comfortable because you're like, oh, it's 1 of 36 to ship this thing, or 2 of 36 in this case for Copper and me and EDN. It's still like if you took, you know, 5,200 or whatever the qualifier was, divide by three, because any one of top three, you know, counts the same. And then like let's say you maxed it, you actually have like a 6% chance of winning a seat versus like a 2.7% chance of, you know, being a 1 out of 36 guy. So yeah, like you're pulling up the payment structure. Like for me, I'm going in with a goal of like top three is just like, let me get one of my lineups in the top three. I'll be pretty happy. Obviously, just the round number of like first or second is really, you know, the goal. But yeah, I think, you know, past three, it's still pretty flat, which is nice. So, you know, anything in the top five is still a pretty fun day. So
are these the payouts here? Are they additional to the 10K that you got? So that 26 through 36 gets no additional money.
Yeah. So it's, you'd get 190 for the 200 prize basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So for those of you guys who, I know we kind of moved quickly here, you've obviously heard us talking about the Dog Bowl final. If you've been listening to my portfolio review, been highlighting some of the winning lineups there, but this is the live final. There has been three qualifiers each week for 12 weeks. We got 36 different entries, a couple multi entries here. And $200,000 first place prize, $100,000 to second, third, $70,000. And these are going to be three different drafts this week. Are there any other things that are kind of on your mind as you're preparing for it? Or are you going to have kind of a similar process this week as usual?
To be honest, I haven't really looked at the slate a ton before Monday Night Football, at least. Like I said, I did one goal line stand yesterday. I did like a six man, one of those like small drafts that says the ADP, but I mean, nothing like, I think at the time, like stuff had already moved bigly. Like JJ was like an 8 ADP. Now he's like a 3.9 or something. So, there's going to be like some super high volatility spots this week, which I think is going to make things interesting. Like, how does JJ look his first week back? Is he limited at all? Right. He obviously took a ton of time off, so you think he's 100%, but like also Josh Dobbs's ball placement is not great. Like, we know that when he's trying to throw those out routes to Hawk for first downs and they're all like high and inside. So, there's a lot of volatility there. And then like, same thing, do you play it safe and draft, the Deontays, like I've often been doing for the promo kind of stuff, because he's a nice mid-range guy. Or do you take the Alec Pierce? Do you take the do you take Russell Wilson facing, the Chargers, which to me seems like a great punt quarterback? Or do you take like Justin Fields, who could absolutely bury you or win you the entire tournament, right? So I think that's interesting. Yeah, like, do you play ceiling, floor, mid-range outcomes? And then are you playing, like, do you want to get leverage? Because each guy's only getting drafted three times. So like, when we talk about like, nobody's taking Jameson Williams in a dog bowl qualifier, right? Like, just take him to get massive leverage. Is that better here, or is it worse? Because even the best players owned three times. Like, do you just play it, kind of ADP wise and take the best player? So there's a lot to think through. And I'm talking to some people offline that are in or not in the dog bowl, just kind of going through stuff. But yeah, I think I took a look today at initial projections from non-ETR sources. And then I think really I'm just going to start taking a look like more so when ETR drops, because that's going to direct the field. The nice thing is there's not like, oh, I drafted early this week, so I got like higher in value. It's all just like back to back to back. So there's no value. So there's really not like a massive outside. I think right now, like the way I'm approaching it is look at the slate entirely, like totals, which games look good, which, there's pass funnels that people aren't paying attention to, stuff like that, run funnels. Like, pay attention to who you like regardless of ADP. And then when the ADP comes in, say, okay, these guys are really popping as values now, right? And I think that's the way I'm playing it. So I'm not really going to be looking at underdog itself until later in the week.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, a couple notes on that stuff. It is a bummer. Like, we don't have the Dolphins on this slate. The really fun Cowboys-Eagles game with a 53-point total isn't on this slate, the Sunday night game. So we really only have one total. I guess we have two totals over 45, Niners, Seahawks, and then, of course, that Bills Chiefs game. And I was just going to say, like, one note on, like, how leveraged you need to get in smaller field. I know, just always talking to Leone when he plays the Thunderdome too, like, he still puts a pretty big premium on, hey, this guy isn't going to be on a single roster of these 36 or however many people are in there too. So I think he always has a good feel for the game theory for those short or really small contests. So I think there's still a lot of value in uniqueness, even though you don't have to be super unique or whatever.
Yeah. Copper's comment is kind of funny, because it's like, for me, I'll redact myself. Scenario is having both of my picks be in the same zone, right? Like, I get that 1-9-1 and it's like, come on, let me build two different teams here, please. Because I do think from a game theory perspective of having two teams with how flat, like, obviously there's still a lot more money up top, but like with it being fairly flat after the top, it's not like a milli maker where it's like 100K to second, 1 million to first, like you can build for, in theory, second place and still be happy. And so it's, do you really need to overlap players, right? Like, I could love somebody this week, but do I really want to take them on both teams? Unless he's like a screaming value, because it's like, now I'm really boxing myself into like, I need this player for both my teams. So that's a really interesting thing. I think if it was more up top, then you'd be incentivized to maybe even stack like four players and like differentiate two. But I think with the payout structure, you're probably more incentivized to not overlap or just overlap one to two players on the teams.
Yeah. Andy, do you have any thoughts on how you would tackle a 36 entry contest versus some of these bigger ones we're normally playing?
No, I think I think the stuff around like uniqueness is really interesting, because you can get unique even within the players who are in the top, 60 something players in the player pool. And so a question I had actually is how, so it's three drafts in a row. You don't get to watch the other ones, right? So like you, that is, I think that's the biggest advantage that you have is being in two drafts.
Yeah.
Is like being able to see, like you need to write down every single team that happens in that draft and have them all. So you know, every single team in that, in your first draft, because that is like a massive information advantage going into your second. And so I think that that's probably like the most interesting thing specifically for the people who have multiple entries.
Yeah, I talked to a guy who's not like a big underdog player, but he's more in the DFS space. And he I think he's has a good understanding of different contest sizing and how to play them. So asked him for some advice. And yeah, I think it's similar. It's almost build one chalk team and see how the draft goes, and then take your Alec Pierce guy in the second draft if you're feeling it, right? So I think that's low-key the way I would play it, but obviously a lot of that's going to depend on like what draft order I get to, because there's still so many variables, right? If I get a pick that I love in the second, like let's say I build a pretty chalk team in the first draft and then I get 1-1 with CMC the next, like I'll be frank, if I got 2-1-1s, I'm taking CMC both times, I don't care. So like if CMC buries me, then that's fine, but sure. You know, then it's different, right? But if it's like the second draft, I like a lot more, then maybe I stick to chalk because it's like, well, this team is really, really strong, getting values. Let me just like build the best team available. I only need to beat 36 people. So
That's gonna be interesting. Yeah, I wonder how much other people will like try to get weird or try to do something slightly different to where the best value that you're going to get or like the most unique thing you're going to get is just like draft the best players. And, you know, if other people are not explicitly drafting the best players, that's also like an advantage in and of itself.
And I think to Andy's point about knowing how one of the drafts went too. So like as an example, like say in the first draft, you don't have Josh Allen, but you know how Josh Allen was stacked. And then in the second draft, you're like, okay, Allen and Diggs were stacked, or maybe that's gonna be impossible. Who the fuck knows? But the point is like, okay, maybe I backdoor stack him here because I know I'm going to be differentiated from how he was stacked. And then, you know, the Josh Allen exposure for 2/3 of the contest, that is pretty interesting.
Yeah. And then I could like run back a Shakir stack and just copy and paste Copper's team that didn't make it in.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. There is some very fun game theory there. And it definitely makes sense why a couple of you guys, and I think the EV really pointed to blasting off hard to get that second seat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think what's interesting. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Crutches. You got it.
I was going to say, I think there's some really interesting dynamics with player values and how people see him too. I know this is like just regular slate talk, but like Dalton Kincaid has just been like a smash, you know, second, third round pick kind of guy in these dog bowls. But like, is Dawson Knox playing this week? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's really interesting things. Like, if he comes back, it's a very volatile pick. You know, I don't think they're going to be able to go back to him like rational coaching, but you just never know. He's a red zone guy. They like him. And the other really interesting thing I think now after last night is like, what happens to like the Bengals team? Like, does Jake Browning just get like pushed up hard and now people are drafting Chase as if he's like playing with Burrow, like, you know, 80% of Burrow or something. So I think that the Bengals team is going to be really interesting to process. Cause like, yeah, I wouldn't mind it, but like how high does like he get pushed up, or do people still just like, all right, like last pick Jake Browning, right? So it's going to be like really interesting to see that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think with this crew, and we've seen kind of the murderer's row of people who are drafting in this, like, I think a lot of that kind of, I don't know, call it like bullshit steam. Like when I hop in the gauntlet, I did one of my drafts and like Debo has a higher ADP than Brandon Ayuk just because he's coming off of the bigger game, even though this is a contest that's a month away and spans, you know, 4+ weeks or whatever, like that kind of, you know, bullshit stuff that doesn't add up. Like, I think you guys are all going to be on top of it to an extent. Like, there's not going to be some of those weird abnormalities. Like another example, like a couple weeks ago when people were able to get Nico paired with CJ Stroud, you know, where it's like in your rooms, you're never going to get a third round Nico paired with CJ Stroud in the way you were in that dog bowl with a bunch of them. Like, I think in a sharp room, like he's just never going to fall back and pair that stack. So I think a lot of that, those inefficiencies are going to be tightened up by a super sharp crew of drafters.
I had a question real quick for Crutches. I know it's like early in the week for you, like thinking about the slate and stuff, but have you like thought about like how much with like the meta environment around, you know, the Badge Bros and everything in particular, like how much people are going to be actually scrolling the F down in these drafts versus like you know, as I know Pete's pointed out on many of his Monday review shows, like a lot of times we just see it just takes the right combination. It's like, you know, many of these weeks, the first place winner is a team of players that have not that have been drafted in every single draft. It was just, you know, they didn't have the right combination, even on some chalky. I think this past week's one was a pretty chalky player draft, but they had the right combination of players. So like, how are you thinking about that approach and getting unique in this smaller contest?
Yeah, I think, I mean, this is like a really non-answer because I don't know how to like how they're going to do it. But I think probably just playing like opposite of what the field is doing is going to be smart in that small field thing, and just like counterpunching. So like if it like in an extreme scenario, we're all sharp and drafting stacks, like does that mean we get player values because we're all like staying in our lanes, almost like, you know, playoff best ball where you mm-hmm. want to be in a room of sharps. Like the one goal line stand I did, I know Crash Rich went like, he went Amon-Ra at four, then Gibbs, then Goff. So he's like double stacking. And you would think in a small field, like I know on DK and stuff, people love to overstack a game in small field because, you know, you need to get less things right. So it's like, are people going to start overstacking, which then leaves values to where it's like, do I take a naked quarterback and just play like the best team and hope I hit a six-way parlay? Because realistically in a 36-person field, you could probably dud on two of your picks and have four just crush and then be fine. Like even in Dog Bowl versus like BR, we see Sobe get there with half a point from George Kittle. And you know, you put it in a 36 person field, then it's like you could probably miss on two of your picks. And so it's like at that point, it's really depends. If people are taking values, then you probably want to overstack games and bet on game environments. And if people are overstacking early and you can tell, then it might just be like, all right, I'm taking like, you know, naked Josh Dobbs for rushing floor, right? Or whatever it is. So I think that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see some of these draft boards. I think they're going to be fascinating, like the approach that people take. And the other point that you made earlier, and sorry, Pete, I didn't mean to cut you off here, but like it is really fascinating, like how this week there is so much new information out there. It's even something like, you know, Jameis coming in for the Saints and how that impacts like a traditionally great rushing matchup against the Panthers, or you know, Jefferson coming back. I think it's just really fun because it's not there. I feel like there's like even like less known going into this week at this point in the season than I feel like there has been in a lot of weeks so far.
Yeah. And it is like, it looks just my quick glance here of looking at quarterback. I mean, it's pretty deep and flat this week. And even a lot of guys who would go undrafted in a 12 person contest, like are in, you know, decent spots. Like I know no one wants to get excited about Desmond Ridder, but the Bucs secondary is awful there.
That could be a great
Geno Smith coming off of torching Dallas Cowboys would be undrafted in one of these Dog Bowls here. Yeah, even Bryce Young showed some signs of life last week. So I don't know. There's some interesting names down here.
Well, I think me and Andy talked about maybe 2 weeks ago, like Desmond Ridder home road splits. Like he's averaging, I mean, he had another bad game at home, but he was facing the Saints who, you know, have been beatable, but their defense is respectable at times. It just depends on if they show up. But like he was averaging 19 fantasy points per game at home and 9 on the road. And so like you get him at home facing the absolute like worst pass defense, you know, for fantasy. Like I don't hate it. Like if I get locked out, like I can run in 2 touchdowns if he doesn't fumble at like the 1 yard line 3 times or whatever. So there's so much interesting stuff. I mean, you get like the Trevor Lawrence injury. He's probably not going to play on a high ankle sprain, I'm guessing. So that opens up another, you know, I don't think anyone's taking Beathard, but at the same time, especially not against Cleveland, but then like it opens up, I mean, Minshew's what, 36 ADP facing like a pretty bad Bengals defense. Like there's a lot of decent late options, but then at the same time, I think for me, that's one of the things I'm thinking through building from quarterback first on these small fields is like, do I want to get one elite QB team and then one punt QB team, right? And that's kind of like what I'm thinking through. Because I do think there's really good punt options, but at the same time, like, you know, if you get that classic Chiefs Bills matchup, and you know, I know the Chiefs defense has been good, but when they face each other in like an absolute like murderer's row must win games for the Bills, is it just Josh Allen leash off, you know, or no seatbelt, just let him go? Do you get that like second ceiling game in a row? So there's a lot to think through, I think, even just in the quarterback room itself.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of high end quarterbacks as well this week. Actually, this is my first time even like seeing the slate at all, but Allen, Mahomes, Jackson, Fields, even like Purdy against Seattle. It's a lot of quarterbacks who could put up serious points.
Yeah, that is going to be fun. Crutches, you have you, tell me about like just your general arc of like drafting on Underdog, because now I know you play in basically everything, or at least heavy basketball in football. Is one of those newer for you, or have you been playing everything for a while?
Yeah, I mean, last year I kind of started. So I was a deposit king for the longest time during football season last year, and that's where I got started. Honestly, I didn't watch basketball for like since like high school, probably. So like 5-7 years, I don't know. And so I did 8 BBMs last year, like the original one. I got in kind of late. Andy and D's put me in the drafters chat, and like they kind of pilled me on Underdog. And so being good shills there. But I started doing some of that. And then and I want to say I did a little more on the resurrection. I did like, I don't know, 75 plus or something. But I still had like a limited bankroll. And then I got into the NBA streets. I don't remember how I got into it, if me and Andy talked about it, or if it was just kind of
like it was around the same time. I think you might have started like a week or so before me.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like second half of last season.
Yeah. I basically just kind of bled money for the first month in NBA, but playing really limited entries, just trying to like figure it out. And then started like ramping entries, had a couple winning days, like profitable days, not with Binks, but yeah. I mean, eventually you got lucky and like binked. So then you have like a lot more wiggle room with the bankroll. But yeah, I just kept doing MBA and like kept noting down when I changed things in my process and how things improved. And so yeah, end of the season, like finished on an absolute tear, like binking the main event back to back days. And then having like a day in the playoffs that I was like really heavy on Booker when everyone was on KD, and I'm like, this is playoff Booker. And I remember that day I finished first, second, and fourth in the main. So like a couple of really big days to finish the season. And I really do like the 2-game slates like tonight, especially with I actually love the in season tournament. It's pretty fun. But because you can kind of project playoff rotations better. And so you know, there's downsides to small slates in that, like, you need to get a pretty lucky combo to win, like last night with, like, Sabonis second round with Haliburton. But at the same time,
and you can Brandon project. Ingram as well, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it was crazy.
Yeah, Joe Val, which didn't matter. It wasn't even optimal compared to but it's, like, I was talking in the Discord yesterday. Like, 2-game slates, you do need the elite combo to win, most likely. But you can profit regardless because people are just making so many mistakes in the 5th and 6th rounds versus, like, a 11, one of these huge slates that we're getting this year. It's just 36 amazing players, and there's more than 36 amazing players, so it's just get lucky in a way. So I really do like these slates, but yeah, sorry not to talk for too long, but I basically withdrew all of my winnings and used it on a down payment on this investment property I bought. So I came into the season with like $1,000 bankroll for NBA, and I was like, I just need to run hot early. I know my process is good. Yeah, and then
he's talking to me, and like he's like, oh yeah, like withdrawing money, I don't want to like blow it all. Like, I don't know how many entries I should do a day for NBA. And I was like, dude, you're one of like the 5 best players on NBA on the site. You need to max enter every day regardless. Like, it doesn't matter. You can always, like, if you have a bad day, you can find some more money. And it worked out. That was a funny conversation back at the start of the season. You're like, oh, I don't know how many entries I'll do. And I was like, just gotta max it all. You have to.
I love enabling Andy.
How many would you guys say, like, on a big Underdog NBA slate with 150 max, how many users are 150 maxing, like, regularly?
I have no idea, honestly. 20? 30?
Yeah.
I feel like it's closer to 20 from what I see, but I'm not in it quite as deep as you guys are.
Yeah, so there's a few guys who don't max but get close, like Nick, who was on here a few weeks ago. Like, if he wanted to max everyone, he could, but he hand drafts all of them, and so he, you know, actually has to like spend time on it. Unlike me, where I just put it in and let the bot rip. But then there's like, if we think through it, there's like T-Box, RT, there's like a bunch of guys who do it who you don't really like see. They don't really talk in the Discord, but they're there every single day maxing. So it's like T-Box, RT99, Feed the Freezer is gone. I don't know what he's up to.
Now you got Gut Pee and Glue Eater.
Yeah, both of them. Vin Deep normally is maxing. There's Jazar. And then there's me, Crutches, John Boy. So yeah, I'm not
sure. Isn't John Boy supposed to be on paternity leave? I mean, how's this dude finding time to max back all
these? He's updating the clout sheets again, which shout out to him. Like I basically said, yeah. I don't have any edge on like 14 day slates. So I skipped one entirely and just played the full court press, which like obviously you can reach for grosser players. And then like I got passed up. Oh, N3S maxes, but N3S packs passed me up for like the most top 20s in NBA this season. And I was like feeling so much FOMO. I was like, literally John Boy's sheet alone is just going to make me max even when it's not plus EV, because I'm just like, I need, like, I'm so competitive. It's not even like the money. It's like, I need to be first on this sheet always. And so I'm like willing to burn $750 to enter the main on like a 14 day slate where I have zero edge. So it's pretty funny.
If John Boy's paternity leave lasted 12 hours longer than Jennings.
is John Boy having a good year?
Yeah. He has good days when he updates the sheets. Obviously, well, naturally, when he wins, he's like, all right, she's getting updated tonight, guys.
That's where I was going with this, because I was like, it is very curious that the two guys creating clout sheets, we got John Boy for Hoops and Easy has the BBM sheet. They just so happen to be absolutely destroying on the sheets they make. For some reason, I feel like if Easy had a sub 20% advance rate, the quants wouldn't be updating that quite as often.
Yes. His advance rate that he shared today was crazy. That's awesome.
Yeah. John Boy is top 15 right now, according to his points. He's just ahead of RT99 and T-Box, basically tied.
Yeah, let me pull this up here.
Sources.
No. Yeah, so for those who are not familiar, John Boy basically keeps track of he has this running sheet. It hasn't been updated now in about a week. But essentially, and so I think it's missing it came right after my second win, I think. Which is too bad. I'd love extra.
I'm on a downtrend on this sheet, so guys, I'm due.
Yeah. But so what it keeps track of here is there's points, which are just cash winnings above a certain threshold. Like, it's not keeping track of all the money you make. And then top 20 finishes. And so it's interesting because I think top 20 finishes are, you know, generally much more indicative of like consistent play across the seasons. But so yeah, it's like a super helpful way. Like, there was a period of time where I was like first or second in top 20 finishes, but was like way down in points. And so we were joking like, oh, I'm due. And then in a week I won two contests and now I'm bullet behind in points and ahead I'm ahead in points now. I'm behind in top 20, but yeah. It's fun. It's really helpful to keep track of.
It's really good. I think John Boy on his own or somebody keeps a sheet where they keep like 1% finishes and 0.01% finish or 0.1% finishes, which is a great way to track, obviously, on your own if you're finishing in the top 1% or 0.1 more than the field. But I think this is a pretty good indication. Like, so if I'm looking at this sheet currently that's updated, like Sam Olson, Cowboys 282 are two guys at max as well, and they're both due for a bink. Like, I would say Sam Olson's probably on the Mount Rushmore of basketball players on the site, and like he's at like 12 points and he has 23 top 20 finishes, which is like just more than Andy, who has like more than double his points. So like it just shows that like Andy's been sun running like the last week or two, and like Sam Olson is like due, for example, for a bink. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and Sam's someone where he'll max sometimes, but he also, I think he hand drafts almost everything, and I feel like there's days I haven't really seen him drafting lately. He's in most days, but every once in a while I won't notice him. And
he drafts a lot later in the day than you for the most part. I run into him closer to lock a lot of times.
I've been starting to do some later closer to lock stuff with just how much injury stuff has been going on, and I'll see him there more often.
We got Numi in the chat. He wants to dial in your order here early, Crutches. He's wondering if 8 McDoubles, 4 medium fries, and 2 Diet Dr. Peppers. It sounds like the I think you should leave sketch. Is that what you are going to be wanting when you land?
Yeah, I'm more of a 4 McDoubles, 1 fry, and a 1 Dr. Pepper guy. And then I'll get rid of 2 of the buns. So I have like 4 4x2s, basically, if you're going off internet rules. It's a little too much carbs for me to have 4 burgers.
I believe we talked about your McDonald's obsession last time you were on, but for people who aren't familiar, let them know about your McDonald's habits.
Yeah, we're sharing. Thanks, Numi. That was actually very thoughtful. But yeah, I don't know. I just ate McDonald's through college and like stuck with it. And at this point, it's almost like a thing I do as a bit, because like people just love to like shit on McDonald's and act like you can't be healthy and eat McDonald's. And I'm like, I'm not admitting that it's like good quality food, but I'm admitting that like if you watch your macros, like you can be you know, you can still be jacked or lean or whatever, you know, it's not the best obviously, but as long as you balance it out, you know, I'll have some rice and chicken that people don't see on Twitter, and then I'll post my McDonald's meals on there. So
you did inspire me. I've had McDonald's like once in the past year. I went maybe must have been like a month and a half ago. I had like a rough day and like didn't want to deal with it. And I just went ham at McDonald's. And I literally thought of you as I was just ordering like $25 worth of McDonald's food. So I assume Underdog's going to have some catered food, you know, at the event. I'm sure we're going to get the hors d'oeuvres going. I mean, is this, you're just a McDonald's purist? Like you got to stay in the zone here, or will you eat a non-McDonald's food this weekend?
No, people take it too far on Twitter. I'll like post like whatever. I'd be at like dinner and people are like, where's the McDonald's, bro? I'm like, bro, like, I have a life. Like, come on. But
hey, now you're realizing the double-edged sword of an online bit. And then people can't decipher it from reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
I literally got McDonald's like 3 weeks ago just to try to win an NBA slate for the vibe.
Ooh, that's the skeleton key.
It didn't work for me.
But I had McDonald's on Thursday night. Saturday night.
I had it for lunch right before this. So,
yeah.
Look at there. There we go. The meal of NBA champions, apparently. Let's see. Other stuff going on. I mean, so in Miami, correspondent Andy, you're going to be down there because of, is it Art Basel is going on?
I mean, I'm going to be down there. There's like a dinner I'm doing with Deez again for We Do A Little. But honestly, mostly I'm just there to tag along to Underdog stuff more than anything else. I'll get down Thursday and then we head out on Monday. So I'm super excited to go and meet a bunch of people who I haven't met. And also shout out to Hope in the chat, Diet Dr. Pepper, best drink. I think it's actually just the best soda other than Baja Blast, which you can only have in very small quantities. But I think like pound for pound best soda, not just best diet soda, best soda.
I'll try that strawberry and cream joint.
There you go.
What?
Pretty wild.
Crutches, have you been to Miami before?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Crypto glory days. There's some fun parties. Bitcoin Miami last 2 years. Well, 2021, 2022. And then just haven't been down there this year. But yeah, I'm excited. It'll be more low key than the crypto weekends that people rent out like mansions there and just party all weekend. But it'll still be fun. I assume a lot of the guys still want to go out and do stuff. So it'll probably be like hungover walking in to sweat the games on Sunday afternoon. So we'll see.
Yeah. The drafts will be taking place Saturday and then you guys will all be sweating it out on Sunday. You mentioned the crypto stuff. I mean, this is probably what the biggest bull run for crypto that we've seen in, I don't know, has it been a couple years? You guys would probably remember better than me. It seems like it's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely nice. It's one of those things. I was talking to Crutches about this as well, where I was like, if crypto keeps going up, like I'm not sure it's worth it to spend that much time a day on Underdog, like comparatively to spending that time on like crypto and stuff. It was like a real thing I had to think about. But I think it's still worth it. But no, it's been sweet. It's been interesting. Like there's a lot of weird stuff that's doing well, but weird isn't like new, kind of different, like ordinals stuff and AI stuff, a lot of things all over the place, but it's been nice to see some green for once.
Well, is that like you mentioned, cause I remember back when like the first DeFi summer, you just being kind of early in vetting those contracts and jumping around to the new chains and stuff, you were able to get ahead of a lot of stuff. Are like new opportunities like that popping up? You mentioned, is it AI stuff that's specifically hot?
Yeah, I think one of the best examples of that has been like farming airdrops on Solana has been, you know, it's been something that's kind of just been like going on for a while, but started to pick up steam as Solana has done well. But like, a lot of these big projects have been kind of announcing their tokens and kind of getting that side of things rolling. And so it was like Jito is one of the more recent ones. And it was like, if you basically used it at all, if you owned like two Jito Solana, it's like a stake Solana, it's like a liquid staking protocol. You probably got like a several thousand dollar airdrop or will in the future. And you just kind of had to use it a little bit. Like it didn't have to be a whale by any means. And so I think that there'll still continue to be a lot of opportunities like that. I think probably the biggest thing right now where it's like, if you're there and doing it, you'll probably make a lot of money is ordinal stuff. I'm not really doing it too much because it's really fucking annoying to do. But I think that's like a reason why it's doing well. It's like, they're very illiquid. They're kind of weird. They're not, I don't know. It's like a pain in the ass. But that kind of stuff normally means that there's a good risk return because most people are too lazy to figure it out.
The crutches, are you feeling, starting to feel the opportunity cost of spending all day drafting versus popping around to these new crypto opportunities?
Oh, for sure. It was less that because I think Andy, not to give away his process, but he does a lot more smaller increments of drafts and like refreshing ranks. To be honest, I mainly did six rounds of 25 drafts for the main. And then usually once I get to like over 100, I might start turning off autopilot and trying to mix in combos I don't have. But at the same time, I think like if you were to play it, like in theory, you could just like shoot 150 off for like three rounds of 50 if you really wanted to like save time and still be plus EV, just less so maybe. Not even less plus EV, but you might be more like T-Box where you're just like shipping a ton one day and losing a bunch the next day, just higher variance. But yeah, I think it's perfectly fine. But yeah, for me, it was more that like I hadn't withdrawn anything off of Underdog from like all the NBA banks and like the two Dog Bowl banks that I was like, okay, there's a lot of money. I should probably like leave like 10 days worth of buy-ins on the site for NBA and just like take the rest out. Because there's like, yeah, you know, multiple five figures that I could be like in Solana or something right now that's like doing work. And so I said I would wait till after Dog Bowl weekend to see, like, hopefully I, you know, win a lot more. But yeah, it's exciting for sure. And I'm kind of in that spot. Like, I think one thing people realize is that like each bull market you have to adapt. And I'm kind of in the spot now where I'm like, I've been in crypto for so long, you get comfortable sitting in like certain coins or certain trades or like, you know, rotations of money. And then you realize like the people that don't adapt aren't like, they're still profitable, but they're not nearly as profitable than the ones that kind of adapt quickly. So like last cycle, I was early Solana. This cycle, to be honest, I was like lighter Solana, heavier ETH, because I still had worries about like Alameda's like forced selling if you want to get into the FTX bankruptcy stuff. So to be honest, I didn't expect them to pop off this soon. Like I still love Solana and I think it's great like product market fit. But yeah, I mean, I still have a decent amount. Like actually my whole retirement account is just Solana on Alto IRA or whatever the crypto IRA sites are. But like in my Liquid portfolio, I was more ETH. And so yeah, I think you just have to adapt. But yeah, I think it's one of the reasons not to like put pressure on myself, but I'm so excited because like if you can ship, like if you're in crypto, at least if you just like ship Dog Bowl this weekend, I think you can easily just take that money and 10x it like pretty not even aggressively in the bull market over the next like year. So like in my head, it's like 200K is more of like, you know, pay taxes and then it's like 1.5 million after you just like 10x in crypto. Yeah. In my head, I'm so like, not to put pressure on myself, but I'm like, dude, like this is like retirement opportunity right here.
Wow, there we go. Now it's not just the Dog Bowl. This is your entire retirement is on the line with this Josh Allen stack you're trying to pull off. That's what I just heard.
Yeah, it's here. I need you more than ever.
Nez went from I'm shipping this because my mom just sent me a good luck text to my anxiety just spiked. Things change quickly. Life comes at you fast, Nez.
He just realized that it's 2 million up top, not 200,000. Everything changed.
I also, let me do a quick plug. Thursday night, before we all head down to Miami, we're going to have our ship cast. We do have a historically awful game between the Steelers and the Patriots, but Nez is going to join us on the ship cast to talk about his beloved Steelers. And also we'll get a little Dog Bowl preview from his lens on Thursday night on the ship cast here. Let's see here. Crutches, any other, Clay, do you have any thoughts on how things going in the crypto NFT space for you right now, buddy?
I'm just trying to like figure out where I want to, you know, stack some chips. So I don't have a whole lot to add. I definitely enjoy seeing where Andy and Crutches are at. I'm still honestly trying to like, you know, get my shit together from my unfortunate hack situation. So is, you know, kind of starting at zero is not as fun as having a lot more in the game, but you know, is what it is. So build it back up.
Talk to me, Clay, about where I've seen a lot of positive sentiment about the in-season tournament. People pretty jazzed about it. What? Because I remember we talked about it initially, we're kind of unsure how it was going to go, how it's going to be received. What's the review now?
I would say A++. Honestly, like I mean, like people are just praising the shit out of, you know, Adam Silver last night on Twitter, and I think for appropriate reasons. I think when you get people caring about the NBA this much in December, that's a huge dub, and you get a game environment. Like, I actually wish I'd watched more of the game last night between the Celtics and Pacers.
It was an awesome game.
Like Halliburton's, you know, come into fruition moment. But it is remarkable. And I think it's exceeded my expectations. And I would say like probably collectively, like everyone's expectations for how much of a positive impact it's had. I still think the courts, we got to adjust the court hues a little bit. They are still pretty vibrant in a lot of cases, but no, I mean, it's a home run. I think that like coming out of last night, I don't know how you could look at it any differently. I haven't seen like one negative opinion today on the timeline about, you know, the NCAA tournament.
I think
Crunches, did you dig it?
Yeah. No, I love it. I think the courts was like I don't think they were more jarring the first, like during the round robin, but I think it's like all the teams with the red courts was just like, I can't do this. Like the Bulls and stuff. Like both of them last night were like a, you know, like a blue tone or a gray tone. And then they have like the free throws as like the cup kind of like, you know, logo. Yeah. So it's pretty cool, I think. But yeah, no, I love it. And from like a, from a projections perspective in DFS, it's so nice to be able to like, especially with a guy like Hallie. I mean, I was 50% Hallie last night. It kind of sucks. Like I was tilting my face off late, as I'm prone to do, because he was just inbounding the ball during free throw, like garbage time. And Buddy Hield was shooting every free throw and getting two steals with like the last 5 seconds to bail Andy's like 40% Buddy Hield out. It went from like, and he was in the optimal. And like, and then Tatum got like a steal and a dunk and a three-pointer to get to like 56 when Hallie was at 60. And Jaylen Brown went from like 39 to 47. Like everything turned on me in the last minutes where like I still won, but like you would have needed Hallie otherwise. And then Tatum got close enough that it was pretty tilting. But yeah, I think being able to project like Lakers tonight, like we know LeBron's Q tag is fake, but it's like even more fake tonight. And yet I ranked him fifth and I still have 32%. And not to like tilt people, but I've got Giannis and LeBron teams. And those are going to be pretty common tonight because like I was thinking about it as I was entering my first draft yesterday and I had him at three where my ranks had him. And I was like, why would I rank him third when his projection is basically close enough to KD and Booker and people are going to be scared off the queue? So even if I come in underweight LeBron, all my LeBron are going to be like better LeBron teams and people have taken him at two or three. So I'm excited about tonight. I've got some fun stands, but yeah, the tournament is super fun. You get these tightened rotations and it's really fun.
Yeah, we'll have the finals on Saturday while we're in Miami. So maybe we'll have to find a spot to go watch that. Be fun.
Nice.
Is Underdog streaming the drafts, Pete? Do you know?
I believe the we're gonna have a couple things going. I believe Hayden and Josh are gonna be doing it. You know, I shouldn't completely try to explain because I don't know exactly how it's gonna transpire. But I will say there is going to be content there. I know me and the Badge Bros gonna be doing some interviews. I know Hayden and Josh are gonna be doing some commentary. I'm just not sure what's live versus what's going to be recorded and posted later. But we will make sure to get a steady stream of content out there from the event for everyone.
So yeah, I would definitely tune in for that.
Speaking of drafts, would you guys want to do a quick NBA draft and then maybe wrap up with like a goal line stand or something?
Yeah, we haven't even talked about the gauntlet at all.
Yeah, I was gonna say me and Andrew. I was like, let's hop into a gauntlet, but maybe another.
I've already done 10 gauntlets.
Nah, you ready for the gauntlet? I've done two.
I think what we should do, just because we got Crutches talking NBA, talking Dog Bowl preview. We stay in that lane and then we'll come back with some gauntlet shows for sure over the coming weeks here. You NBA bros, tell me what do you guys want to guide me through here in the lobby? What should I play?
I'd say if you're only going to do one, we should do a crossover because it's three entry minutes.
I can hop in the crossover too. Me and Andy probably haven't filled it.
That's where you're wrong. While we were in this call, I filled the crossover.
I had to make up a couple that knew me tossed. So.
Oh, there! Come on, Numi.
See, Andy, you're in.
Oh, this. I am in this. I entered them already, so I have it on auto draft. I'll turn it off auto draft.
All right. So Crutches is the enemy. Oh no, Andy's the enemy. All right, it's just Clay. It's just me and Clay.
Yep.
All right.
Let's hit it, baby.
All right. So what do we, how many games are there tonight?
Two.
Just two. Games
late. Okay.
So last night and tonight were the first round of the knockout round of the in-season tournament. And so it was the top eight teams. It was the Pacers and the Celtics last night. The Pacers won, and it was the Pelicans and the Kings, and the Pelicans won. And so now the Milwaukee and the Knicks play, and the Lakers and the Suns play, and they play the winners of those last two on Thursday. But it's also weird. It's like not Thursday night. It's like Thursday day because of Thursday night football, which is just like very strange to me. Like the first game starts at like 4 p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, that
is weird.
So why
the fuck are there two Monday night games this week?
That is super,
at the same time, one on ABC, one on ESPN. I don't get that at all.
They need to bring Scott Hansen and to do a mini Monday Night Football Red Zone. Who should I take, Clay?
I like Booker here. Chalk it up.
Yeah, I was going to take Booker. I was going to take Booker one too. I was on the Bad Bros show or in the chat telling them that's not like a stand I would take, but if I wanted to get spicy, I think Booker playoff time, like those kind of games, I'm all for it.
And Clay, Andy goes Durant, James. Those players seem fine. Who should we take?
I would go Randall.
Okay.
Personally, yeah. It's like I think.
All right, so we start Booker reach, Randall. But...
I think maybe ESPN scheduled two Monday nights with Underdog in mind, just saying, hey, you know, last week of best ball, we want to give people that last single game sweat on Monday Night Football for the, you know, I'm 2 points behind with needing, you know, 14 from whatever fourth string running back that's still alive on the Monday night game.
You know what? That would our guy PD Patrick Donovan, who has the Best Ball Mania database explorer. Like, if he can get that updating in real time on Monday night,
to see
if you have any chance for your teams squeaking in.
He needs to throw like some ads on there for Monday night because he's gonna have some serious users on there.
Who should we take, Clay?
I think I would lean Mitchell Robinson over D'Angelo Russell here.
Okay, let's do it.
I don't know. That's super spicy.
Clay IKB in my life here.
It's definitely spicy, but I'll take it. I think for those following along at home, I think that there's like a pretty clear kind of tier break where you have Nurkic, D'Angelo Russell, and Brooke Lopez as kind of like this little in-betweener section, and then Mitchell Robinson kind of coming in after him.
Yeah,
but
we got here, Pete. We're on the clock. We got five left.
Oh, my bad. Click one. Eric Gordon, Beasley, Barrett.
Beasley.
Got it.
He's been closing.
The amount of minutes that Beasley plays is insane, but sadly his fantasy points per minute are like
not great.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, he plays like 40 minutes a game.
I'm coming to this one pretty blind. I haven't drafted NBA today, but I was catching up a little bit on John and Nez and Yumi talking hoops earlier.
Doing these two game slates makes me like really curious how much different Underdog NBA would be if there was just never an ADP. I mean, it'd be great for us. So
T-Box was on Twitter going like, I love the slates with no ADP, which I mean, I because it's like you can do. Yeah. Not to like, this is not like a process.
You could do like
your 20 buzzer beaters. If you're maxing all the other stuff, like use the buzzer beaters as a test run and you'll see like on your ranks who you have like 90% of, and then you just have aggressive like buzzer beater stance, which could work out for like Andy did the other day. And then after that, you're like, okay, everybody's taking this guy over my guy. Let me drop him a couple spots. But it's honestly really fun. I love these slates.
Who are we wrapping up with, Clay?
Oh man. I mean, I don't want to take another Nick. But that's a lot of Knicks on one team. I mean, I feel like we got to go like Prince or Reddish, but Reddish's minutes are a little more volatile. Prince is not a good points per minute guy, but he'll play.
Dude, let's just lean into the Knicks onslaught of the big ragu.
Let's do it. It's a small slate. Why not?
Now we have
two shots in a pop-off game against with Zakarian's flowchart here against the Bucks guard. So I don't hate it.
It's a flowchart game. All right. You had me at flowchart there. There we go. Yeah, that's like what Crutch is talking about, the no ADP. That's why I thought the Thanksgiving, the turkey contest was like the perfect contest, because you had three games, No ADP, no rake. It was like just a perfect, I mean, that's like the ideal type of contest right there.
Yeah, we lost in that one. I was on the other side of Dave's bet on the, he was just full all in Debo and I was 50% Ayuk and then like 50%, I forget what it was, but yeah, we were on a lot of the good stuff, but wrong side of a few plays.
Yeah. Yep. It is tough. I saw some people posting this week and I was, you know, how weird it is with sometimes like your overall exposures will be like pretty accurate on who you wanted to be on the teams or whatever. But if the pieces don't come together, it like doesn't matter. And the same way, I think it was, I was inverted a couple weeks ago, had his big finish in his like overall portfolio, didn't do well, but he just had that one lineup that, that came together in a really nice way. All right, I'm hopping in. Let's wrap up with a goal line stand here so we can get Crutches a little 12-person tournament rep here.
This is my first NFL draft of the
league. I heard these are feeling super slow. I think it's just all Dog Bowl guys practicing, which I've only done once. I don't know, but this one should at least fill for the bros.
Yeah, we're going to get a little stream. Little stream bump here, hopefully. What is this? I see Peter is a decimal guy. T-Box turned me into $15 withdrawals. I don't know what withdrawals are, guys. I am the deposit king. The money stays on the site. I haven't seen any investment properties come across my desk that is compelling me to withdraw right now. So the money stays in.
All right, one more. I believe in the stream.
That's right. You know, it's not quite, you know, hot best ball summer snap fill a BBM draft here, but we did it. A little Tuesday.
How are your guys' advance rates going?
I mean, I'm happy with mine. I'm at I think I was at like 19. I've been bouncing between like 19% and 20% for my stream drafts. I'm very happy with that.
Yeah.
I had a realization today that I should have workshopped the week 14 is all that matters bit a little bit more while also drafting a shit ton of Sam Howell, who does not play in week 14. So yeah, we're down bad on this end. So we hope that the teams advancing can hold on.
It's honestly cruel to like talk about the advance rates after I was like sharing those users at Easy who have like, 30%+ advance rates and like 10 teams in the top 1000. It just makes all of us look very poor.
Well, do you see the guy
70% looking at chat?
The 73 teams advancing and he's just a Cowboys homer.
It's so 80, good.
80% Dak.
Yeah.
Do you know what we call that? We call that the chess Liam. You know, just draft your favorite team and just hope they're good. And when they are, congratulations, you son.
I think the more fun part of that exposure was 44% CD, like a first rounder. You just literally have to take them like 1-3 all the way through 1-12 and just like that's all of them. Like you'll take CMC or Justin Jefferson and then you're like, all right, now it's CD time.
It's wild.
I'm pretty happy with mine. I've been just under 30%, like most of this, like I went back down to like 24% and now I'm back up to like 28 point something, but it was definitely a bad week for me, like with Jaden Reed and Jalen Warren and like Brian Robinson being my highest players and Curtis Samuel, like none of them hit. So I had like 8 in the top 10,000 and now it's down to like 5. And then I had a team that was, it got up to close to top 100 overall, but it's hovering in like the 400 to 600 range right now, but it's not looking great because it's a zero RB team. And McKinnon was out the last 2 weeks. Swift just got a concussion probably. So, it's a little thin, but we just need a little run good this last week.
I've been pretty surprised how swingy like the top 10,000 team stuff has been. I thought by this point in the regular season, it'd be kind of sticky, like incremental moves. And it's like, no, that pendulum still wildly swings.
Yeah, I think the funniest one that I've, like every time I pull up the splash, the dashboard and like check out, I think like Walrus Pauls is always in the top 50. And I'm like, we made this meme of him and he's just hung around the entire season. He's like 49th or something right now. He's like in the first two columns. And I'm like, this guy just won't go away. It's like amazing.
Yeah, it's very impressive. All right. This is in the full, like I have not done, I think I did one battle royale when it dropped. Let's see, what do we want to do here on this board? I feel like Lamar is still kind of like perpetually undervalued here. I'm going to take Lamar at home coming out of the bye.
Yeah, I'm curious where Isaiah Likely's ADP ends up at, to be honest, in these contests.
Yeah.
He hasn't done anything, but his targets went up a little this week, and I assume he'll get steamed because everyone's smart, and so like people will have Lamar and they'll just add on Likely at the end of the drafts. And like I said, especially in a small field, like I could see people just double stacking Zay and Likely and just running that, just because like you can just overstack.
Yeah. Yeah. I was looking at his target shares today, cause when I did my first gauntlet, I was seeing how stuff was shaking out, and 14% target share last week. Not too bad. Bateman's honestly didn't look too bad, either. It's still, I still feel like they're kind of figuring out what they want their offense to be, sans Mark Andrews.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so sad about the Mark Andrews injury. I posted one of my best ball teams this morning. It's my best ball team. I have like six teams in the top 10,000. It's not too bad. But this is my best one. And my two tight ends are Mark Andrews and Greg Dulcich. And so is my highest scoring team, and it hasn't had a tight end now for a few weeks.
And it's brutal.
The rest of the team is like sick. But
the crazy thing is like you're probably impossible to make like even the semis, but I bet you could make the quarterfinals without a tight end.
I think I could. And like,
yeah,
because I have like Kyren last round. I have it's a Tua and Tyreek team, and my other quarterback is like Jordan Love, and so it's just got a lot of really the guys who are coming on and playing well. Claire, are we about to give John
I was not planning to take
the Mahomes Kelsey. Here, but... I'm not either, and you know what? I'm not going to be an asshole.
All right, Andy, you want me to give you? I just searched Greg Dulcich. This report from a few days ago. Troy Rennick, a Denver reporter, talked to Dulcich today. He didn't require surgery on his hamstring. He's been working closely with the team and believes plan is working. He's been working on the side of the field this week. Could be a sneaky boost to the passing game and Andy's team if he returns in the next few weeks.
That'd be huge. Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be hard to get past Adam Trautman on that team, so we'll see. But
what was going on here? What did I miss? A little?
We just gifted John Boy, not John Boy, John Kelsey Mahomes team.
Wow. Yeah, I've been seeing people post the GM of this in the Battle Royale, much less the 12 person here.
I think it's going to be interesting because I think this is the stuff we'll see in like a all badge like finals room.
I agree.
But like,
yeah,
everybody knows Mahomes has underperformed this year. There's no slappy, just like, hey, I like Mahomes. He's a fun name. Like
yeah,
the ADPs are going to be so fake there. It's like, just get your guys, honestly.
The 12 person ADPs are already kind of fake because they're just all battle royale pilled. And then you layer on the badge bro dynamic. It will be a go get your guys draft for sure.
Like, what do you do with like CJ Stroud? Does every sharp be like, well, he's playing the Jets and they don't get pushed and he's facing a good defense. Let's just let him go undrafted. Like honestly, you could see it happen. Like,
I wouldn't be shocked
unless Cognition is in my draft and he just autos the entire thing from remote.
Yeah, I know. I think I would. I'm trying to think how I would handle that spot. Like if I got a value on Nico and then got another value on a sliding Stroud, I probably would be like, defenses don't matter. Shout out Josh Hermsmeyer. Let's roll.
Yeah, it's like at what point are you like Gardner Minshew against the Bengals or CJ Stroud against the Jets, right? Like it's a real question.
I know, and it definitely is different, I think, for like a quarterback matchup. You know, for like running back, it's just like, okay, what are we gonna even overthinking a guy like James Conner against the Steelers and he goes nuclear where the volume is so good. But it's more just like the super ceiling outcomes for that game are just so unlikely, right? Because they just can't get pushed. It's like even Stroud could like march the ball down the field a couple times and score passing TDs, but then it's like, are they going to need to do that in the second half? And they already have a pretty run-minded philosophy. I mean, you see them at the goal line, and it still pains them to throw down there. They're like, let's fucking ram Devin Singletary and Damian Pierce into the line 9 times.
Dude, yeah, one time I roll out Singletary, Pierce fucking score. I was like, well, they're the best ball bags go, you know.
I think someone mentioned in the chat, but I don't think anyone would do it in the finals, but like with no Derek Carr, does like somebody actually take Taysom Hill as a QB in the finals of the Dog Bowl? That would be the most like ballsy move ever. But like, you also have to say is like, it is the Panthers run defense, which is the worst like around. Like, you wonder if they give him like, you know, a full set of carries and like a decent amount of QB snaps if like, you know, red zone, if they don't trust Jameis down there. So, like, it'd be the one week I would do it of any week this season. And people have been trying to do it all year, and I've been saying it's bad, but it's probably still bad. But like, if you're talking a leverage thing, you know, he could easily rush in two or three against the Panthers.
I wanted to draft Taysom last week in the BRs, and Crutches told me I was a fucking idiot for doing that. So I appreciate the role reversal here, Crutches.
Or I'm just,
but you can calibrate that both ways. It's like, you know, if Carr is a check down machine to Kamara, right? And you think Kamara gets a lot of burn, both from a catching perspective and rushing perspective against the Panthers, you see that maybe that's a negative with Jameis coming in. But they also might just say, like, hey, we don't want Jameis to throw 75 interceptions this game. Who I kind of want to roll out Jameis on redacted this weekend for real. But maybe they just like run the ball with Kamara like a shit ton of times because they just are like gonna say, like, hey, we're not gonna throw any passing plays for the entire game. So let it play out.
Well, yeah, strategy is slipping. Interesting.
Let's recap these teams so far. So I'm out of the 11. I did get the Lamar Jackson, Zay Flowers stack, have Brandon Ayuk in there. Was very tempted to take Zach Moss ahead of Zay Flowers, but I wasn't sure if Copper would let Zay swing back around to me. Ended up taking Rashad White instead. Crutches starts Kamara, Chase, Jahmyr Gibbs, T. Higgins here. See what he's cooking up. Andy, Justin Jefferson, Davante Adams, Bijan about to be on the clock. Clay, Amon-Ra, Chris Olave, Isaiah Pacheco.
My cats are going at it over here. Guys, chill.
Andy setting up the formerly great wide receiver matchup here. Justin
wide
receivers, Davante
formerly
Adams.
Known as. Yeah. I'm also fighting back against the Austin Eckler foot.
Yeah, the only one you're missing, Andy, is Cooper Kupp. Imagine that at the beginning of the year. I've got Devontae, Cooper Kupp, and JJ on the same team.
Yeah, I know. I could have had him, too. That's interesting, too. Like, Kupp and Ridley, two guys who obviously are going to slide a lot just because of matchup, quarterback against good defenses.
The Ridley one's interesting, right? Because I think generally if Lawrence was fine, he would have gotten mega pushed up because people would have just been doing the target share thing with Christian Kirk out. And now it's kind of offset a little bit. But honestly, like, I don't know. I guess I'm just saying, I don't know if Ridley should move much in either direction because he is going to see a pretty big bump. Ingram should probably be getting a little bit more love too.
Yeah, I was going to say the opposite, but it's going to be interesting once again in Miami where people know both sides of the matchup, but like there's the stat that like Cleveland's given up like 160 yards to Mark Andrews over the two matchups they had. And then like 120 yards the rest of the year to all tight ends. So like absolutely shutting down tight ends other than Mark Andrews. So I think that's like an interesting one. Their defense played really bad this past week with like Myles Garrett kind of hurt, but I think it's going to be interesting to see if people want to play Jags with a backup quarterback against the best pass defense basically in the NFL.
Yeah, I think my Ingram take was just more directly related to Kirk in that he runs his routes in a lot of similar areas of the field. And, you know, you see, like, the reason the Jags offense is so fucking frustrating is because they maroon Calvin Ridley out on an island out there, and then they just throw it on the sideline. They make him win in one-on-one coverage, or it's just a quick hitter and he goes out of bounds. Where normally like Kirk and Ingram are the ones at least getting some yards after catch stuff over the middle of the field. But yeah, it's not a fun spot whatsoever. I wouldn't be super excited about investing in them this week. Yeah, the Ridley narrative change every week. He needs both Zay and Kirk to be fully healthy to haul in all those passes.
This is such an interesting part of the draft here. I hadn't really thought about it, but like having Stroud and Dalton Schultz here down at the bottom with Tank not being there is like really interesting, but I have no idea how real his Q tag is for Schultz. And like, so very similar here. I just drafted Gerald Everett and I have Austin Eckler. You can kind of put two and two together there as to the quarterback that I'm hoping to take. And you have like Dobbs here. It is really a really interesting kind of quarterback situation. And you get like, there's a totally free Desmond Ridder and Kyle Pitts thing if you want to get there. It's an interesting like last two rounds of the draft.
Yeah. I think like not, it's obviously the Jets, but I think taking Schultz is probably fine because the swaps this week with 11 games are pretty decent. Like you'll probably see some of Otten, Higbee, Tanner Hudson, Juwan Johnson, Jonnu Smith, Parham, or Michael Mayer go undrafted. So like you could just set your ranks and swap to one of them if you really like the upside of Schultz. But once again, then you get back to like, does the game situation even force the Texans to even try to score points, or are they just going to win like 13-0?
Mm-hmm.
Fellas, I got to jump, sadly.
Yeah.
Crutches, good luck to you in Miami, my man, Nez, Copper, everyone else in the chat who's competing. Hope one of us in the Discord, hope one of y'all in the Discord takes it down for us. Make us proud and enjoy Miami, guys. I'll be in there in spirit. Enjoy.
Sounds good, Clay. We'll catch you later.
All right, peace.
Couple things here. Yeah, John pointing out, so one of the pick'ems that I posted for the hand builders in the Deposit Kingdom Discord yesterday was I really liked it was Calvin Ridley versus Christian Kirk rivals, but they were spotting Christian Kirk 8 yards. And Christian Kirk won despite leaving the game in the first quarter because he had that one catch and Ridley ended up topping out at like 30 yards or something. The other rivals though went the wrong way. I had Travis Etienne -3 fantasy points versus Joe Mixon. Fucking luck box TD vulture Joe Mixon ruined that one. Also, Crutches, yeah. Copper wants to know, are you drafting via phone, laptop, iPod, iPad, smartwatch? Which device will you be using?
I was thinking like sending my picks in via carrier pigeon, but I'm not sure if that's allowed. So probably we'll have to do laptop otherwise.
There you go.
I'll just have Numi like run in like a NFL draft with like a piece of paper and hand it to
What I want someone to go with like the full nerd setup where they just bring their entire PC tower and just set it up on there, like get the double monitors, zoom in on the draft board.
I think the important thing for me, like to be real, is just to make sure, and I'm sure they've thought about this, but that like obviously nobody can see my laptop screen. Will be set up in a way that, you know, we're all kind of facing each other like a big circle or something. Because realistically, I'm gonna set my ranks based on tiers like I normally do, and then I'll be drafting my guys based off of those. So probably will be just be on the laptop with like no, I don't need any extra stuff. But yeah. I think like most of my prep will be Friday, Saturday, when ADPs are kind of real for once, even though they're not 12-man real.
Yeah. And it was weird. I mean, like you mentioned the ETR stuff and like, some, it's weird how some weeks and some ranks guys will get mega steamed from that. And then like last week, like they had Zach Moss as like a top six overall pick and his 12 person ADP never even really budged that much. His battle royale ADP just kind of stood at like 23. So it is interesting to know like who is going to get pushed up and who kind of just sticks.
I think that was painful. I had 44% Zach Moss and that was the first time I maxed a BR. And I just thought it was a free square, to be honest. Everyone was talking about like he's chalky, but I was thinking like if he's being played in DFS at like 75% in small field, like 50% in large, he can only be owned 16% in BR. So like in theory, it's positive in my opinion. I know it's two different, it's like a pretty simple argument, but like, yeah, it's not like we're saying he's owned 50% here and we have to worry about that. Like if you just take him every single time at like 16 through 20 something, then like I thought it was a good play, but yeah, didn't work out. But like I said, I'd rather get some run bad and then just be due by the time I get down to Miami, so.
There you go. Look at this guy just winning everything, talking about run bad over here. Andy, any final words here before we wrap up and get on our pack our bags for Miami?
No, I'm excited. It's going to be fun to meet a bunch of people in person for the first time and do all that. It should be a good time. Looking forward to it.
Yep. I have a slightly abbreviated schedule this week because of that. Couple things. Stat chasing, I'm filling in. Dricko is out over on ship chasing, so Ben Gretsch and I are filling in with Sacrilegious, another Dog Bowl qualifier. So if you want to tune in and try to get me, he already kind of warned me that he's going to be playing things a little closer to the vest this week. I will try my best to pry some good stuff out of Sacrilegious tonight. And then I'm actually doing, I had to cancel my Best Ball After Dark or DFS After Dark on Saturday. I had an internet outage. I'm going to do a doubleheader with Sacrilegious. He's my guest for that. So if you're a YouTube member, you'll have access to that tonight, a rare Tuesday edition of DFS After Dark. Tomorrow, Swolecast as usual. And then my other wrinkle is Friday, the block party show with JM. We're going to record that Thursday evening because I will be in the air at the normal recording time. And then off and on the clock, with the Badge Bros, we're going to do that live from the Underdog House on Friday night, probably 9 p.m., maybe a little bit later start time for that show. So tune in for that, and then we'll have, you know, wall-to-wall Dog Bowl coverage from the Underdogs drafts on Saturday. So yeah, appreciate all of you guys hanging out. Good luck to Crutches. Appreciate you swinging by and chopping it up with us. Follow him on Twitter. I got his link down below there. Of course, the McDonald's homage in the name. Hang out with us in the Discord. You heard Crutches and Andy referencing the Badge Bros channel. We got all kinds of action going on there, especially with the gauntlet now dropping. Make sure you are chatting it up with us in there. Otherwise, have a great rest of your week. I'll see you around, and good luck to all of our Dog Bowls.